much paralyzing terror as in this hair-raising orgy of sadism.
The mouth of the streets to tell their friends how wonderful it is to be scared to death.
Hello and welcome to episode 939 of Dread Media. I'm your host, Desmond Reddick, back with you for another great episode, of which I'm going to tell you all about what's coming up right after I tell you that we're proud to be sponsored by you. More specifically, the patron Dreadites. For as little as a dollar a month, you can support the show to keep it going in perpetuity forever and ever. Patreon.com/dreadmedia. Thank you to everyone who does. All right, so before we get to what's up on this week's episode, I guess I should explain. Last week, I mentioned that it may be the last Dread Media ever because a wildfire was rushing towards my house, and I was on wildfire alert and evacuation alert, I should say. So I've spent the past week plus with my most prized possessions packed and right by the front door, ready to go. And while the wildfire is not gone, I am very happy to say that today we were taken off of evacuation alert. So thank you for your thoughts. And just to let everybody know, everything will probably be okay. So, yeah, naturally, I thought this week we should talk about some fire. This week, you know, I mean, we've covered the films of Tobe Hooper a few times in the life of this podcast and have covered all of his major entries in the horror genre, everything from Texas Chainsaw Massacre and 2 and Life Force, etc. But this week we're looking at some obscure Tobe Hooper, starting with Tom and me taking a look at Spontaneous Combustion. And then I'm going to come back and do a Dread Media top 5 obscure Tobe Hooper entries, Tobe Hooper efforts, I guess, both in TV and film. So, yeah, we'll do that. And we'll play some tunes. And speaking of tunes, we're going to play it's definitely in the top 5 of oldest songs I am playing. Oldest recordings, I should say, that I've played on Dread Media. So here it is, The Ink Spots from the film Spontaneous Combustion. This is I Don't Want to Set the World on Fire.
I don't want to set the world on fire. I just want to start a flame in your heart. In my heart I have but one desire, and that one is you. No other will do. I've lost all ambition for worldly acclaim. I just want to be the one you love. And with your admission that you feel the same, I'll have reached the goal I'm dreaming of. Believe me, I don't want to set the world on fire. I just want to start a flame in your heart.
I don't want to set the world on fire, honey. I love you too much. I just want to start a great big flame down in your heart. You see, way down inside of me, darling, I have only one desire, and that one desire is you. And I know nobody else ain't gonna do.
I've lost all ambition for worldly acclaim. I just wanna be the one you love. And with your admission that you feel the same, I'll have reached the goal I'm dreaming of. Believe me, I don't want to set the world on fire. I just want to start a flame in your heart.
I am Brad Dourif, and I bring you the gift of fire. Fire.
Yeah, underseen, perhaps for a good reason, yeah, Toby Hooper film. From
one of the many lost Toby Hooper films, and God, I wish I hadn't found it. But
1989, what a weird era to be Toby Hooper.
Now, if I know my Toby Hooper history correctly, this was a film that was supposed to be produced by the Cannon Group.
Oh, okay, yeah, that makes sense.
And then the Cannon Group broke up, and neither Menahtan or Golubis wanted to touch it. Golan or Globus were like, nah, nah, nah. And eventually Johnny Carson's agent decided to produce it.
Huh.
Henry Bushkin.
Johnny Carson's agent. All right.
Johnny Carson's former manager, Henry Bushkin. And this is what came out. And it's something.
It sure is.
Oh my goodness.
Do you want to synopsize it?
So Brad Dourif. Well, actually we got to go earlier because of course this is the Toby Hooper wants to do a Stephen King film really badly movie.
Sure.
In the 50s there's an atomic test that supposedly is for this special bunker known as Samson. And the couple, because they're locked in there for 7 days, end up conceiving. And they conceive Brad Dourif. And even as a baby, Brad Dourif is able to bring fire. So he burns up his parents.
Right.
Flash forward many years. And Brad Dourif, remember, like I said, this is Toby Hooper's I Want to Do a Stephen King movie. Brad Dourif is a teacher.
Right, yeah. Either teacher or writer, one or the other.
Yes, and he's divorced from a blonde girl.
Yeah.
And he's dating another blonde girl who looks exactly the same. And the first blonde girl's grandfather was the person who raised Brad Dourif.
Yeah.
And he's also involved with opening up a nuclear power plant. And people start burning up. And it's no big secret, it's Brad Dourif's fault.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, there is, of course, the phenomenon of spontaneous human combustion,
mm-hmm.
Which I'm not sure. I feel like it's been completely debunked.
Like, I don't know.
Been completely debunked, but in this film, it's not necessarily spontaneous human combustion, even though the title of the film is Spontaneous Combustion. It's pyrokinesis.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's very much like It's very much Firestarter.
It is.
Featuring a grown man, basically.
Only with the exception of Brad DeReef, Melinda Dillon, and John Cypher, nobody knows how to act worth a damn.
Oh, the acting's pretty terrible.
In fact,
I think Brad DeReef is the only one worth praising, frankly.
I think Brad DeReef just said, "Oh, I'm in a piece of shit."
It's so comic booky. It's a very comic booky movie. It's right out of Marvel Comics is like the premise, basically.
Yeah.
And he just becomes a radioactive vigilante, essentially.
Yeah, he becomes the Human Torch.
Yeah.
I will tell you exactly how you can tell if this is the movie for you people at home.
Yeah.
In this movie, John Landis belches fire.
This is true. Yeah.
I'm sitting there going like, is that John Landis? The effects are awful.
Yeah. You get to see John Landis die, though, so that's great.
Yes, which is good. Which is good.
There's a lot of superimposition of flames over heads.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say that, like, the sort of makeup / wardrobe combination on the various elements of burning throughout the movie. Like, there is this one sort of shot where Brad DeReef is just, like, sort of... Like, I was going to say smoldering, but not the way like a model would smolder. Smoke sort of like pouring off of his body, you know, through little tears in his suit kind of thing. I thought that was all done very, very well.
One makeup effect.
Yeah.
Early on where it looks like, and I don't know how they did it. Because I know it's not CGI, but it looks like he burned a hole in his flesh.
Yeah.
I was just like, ugh.
Yeah. Really, and it looks like a real ugly wound.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But once we hit the third act and, Brad DeReef is being looked more and more like Fireman Bill.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Again, that's something I appreciate about it, right? Like the main character's physical appearance takes a toll, like from the beginning to the end of this movie. It's not unlike Jeff Goldblum in The Fly.
Yeah. But which is the only time we're going to mention The Fly in relation to this film ever.
Yes. Yes. Although this movie's a lot like Fly 2, actually.
Melinda Dillon from Close Encounter shows up with a weird accent that I think she got from Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Huh. Yeah, I didn't pick up on that.
Because she is the person who was one of the overseers of the original experiment in the 50s.
Right.
And Brad DeReef tracks her down, but John Cypher is Dr. Marsh, who is a doctor / assassin, apparently.
Right.
I thought he was okay too, but okay.
Yeah, John Cypher was all right.
Oh God!
Hey, what about Dick Butkus?
Oh my Lord!
The camera pans over the meeting of generals and scientists, and it crosses Dick Butkus's face. And I was like, God damn it. I was not expecting to see Dick Butkus in this movie or any movie for that matter.
And apparently, Dick Warlock of, the original Michael Myers is in here somewhere.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh.
But it's really cheap looking.
Yes.
The acting is a bunch of people trying to be serious when there's not a serious bone in this script's body.
Okay. So there's a quote from Brad DeReef here. That was apparently during an interview, Fangoria interview for Exorcist 3, which came out the year after this.
Right.
About spontaneous combustion. And he says, quote, "You see me playing my heart out in scenes that are not working. And the reason they're not working is that movie doesn't make sense. It's almost funny. As a matter of fact, the better my acting was in some of the latter scenes, the funnier the film was. Mm-hmm. I found myself at the mercy of people who didn't know what they were doing. I probably shouldn't be saying this, but my feeling is the producers destroyed it. Toby could have made three different movies with the material he had, and each one would have worked. But by the time he got it, it had changed from a love story to a suspense thriller about my character's paranoid fantasy to a guy goes crazy film about this insane killer who becomes a destructive force that's going to wipe out mankind. We went back and kind of restructured it as a love story, but it didn't really help. The beginning of the film was great, and a certain portion of my stuff was fine, but then it became stupid when all the flame stuff started happening."
And the weird thing is, like, the special effects people put electricity effects in with the fire effects.
Yeah.
So he shoots electricity at you, and that causes you to burn.
Yeah, I mean, it does. It's just, it's very, like, it's weird because a lot of the combustion, I'll say, sort of takes the form of sparks.
Yeah.
Like sparks, like a hole burst in your arm and sparks are pouring out, you know? It is, like, I think, again, it's more like Incredible Melting Man than it is, Firestarter in that aspect, because I think he is like basically like just like radioactive man, you know?
Yeah, it's bad.
it's
funny bad.
Yeah.
And like I said, I Dourif says that he was trying to do things seriously. I think he just realized this is shit.
Yeah.
And just decided to just lean into it. But they needed a better cast to pull this craziness off.
Yeah, I mean, this is not the kind of thing that Brad Dourif really wants to carry on his shoulders, you know?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the movie does, like, completely lose steam when it's just, like, other people talking about him, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Even though, like, he's on camera for most of this movie, but
there's a scene where John Cypher is talking to the other doctor.
Right.
And they're like...
There's a couple of those.
Yeah, there's a couple of those. And it's like... It's like walking through mud.
Yeah, and for sure.
It's kind of sad because this is what he was coming off of before he did this.
Yeah.
A film that I don't like, but I know that you like very much. Life Force.
Okay. Yeah.
Invaders from Mars, which I have seen and I think is really, really good.
Yeah.
And of course, the classic Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2.
Right.
Where Toby Hooper said, "Why do you want to do Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2? Let's just make it into a spoof."
Right.
Now, after this, we get I'm Dangerous Tonight, which is Anthony Perkins and a killer dress.
Right. Right. I forgot all about that movie.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. Although, of course, it features Kirby's crush.
Right. Madge and Amick, right.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Night Terrors. And a film that I think a lot of people have fondness for, Body Bags.
Yeah, right. He did half of Body Bags, right?
Right. Then comes The Mangler, which you and I have covered.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes downhill way from there. The Apartment Complex... Crocodile, which he insisted was his film to mark the 25th anniversary of Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah.
And it's wretched. The remake of the Toolbox Murderers.
Right.
Sorry, the Toolbox Murders.
Yeah.
With,
Sherry Moon Zombie.
No, not, well, Sherry Moon Zombie,
she's in it, right? She's in the opening, right?
She's in the opening, but the film stars, Angela
May.
From, May.
Yeah. I can't remember off the top of my head.
Yes.
Bettis. Angela Bettis.
Yes, Angela Bettis. But, yeah,
That movie's got one thing going for it.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a jump scare that happens through the middle of the screen. Very, very rare. Very rare in horror for something like that to work. And it's about the only thing that works in that movie.
It's very rare that you can say this is the film, and this spontaneous combustion is the film where things go very, very wrong for him.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it certainly feels like something that was meddled with.
Yeah. And is it just me, or does the nuclear power plant not pay off?
No, not at all.
Okay, good, good.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they make a big deal about the nuclear power plant's coming online, and I figured, oh, he's going to blow up the entire town with the nuclear power plant.
Right.
No,
it's not about that. Yeah.
No. He burns into a puddle of ashes and then burns his girlfriend, which was very easy because, of course, she has so much wood in her.
Zing.
Cynthia Bain was the actress's name.
Yeah.
I think we have spent more time talking about it than anybody thought when they were actually producing this film.
this movie is all over the place. It's got some great imagery. It's got some terrible imagery. It's got an intriguing central role.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a topic you see in speculative fiction very much. If this was the opening arc of a Marvel comic, at the very end of the comic, he would have been gifted a lead-lined suit, and become, some form of radioactive armored superhero that shoots blasts out of the palm of his hand.
He would become combustion.
Yeah. So, like, it's that kind of vibe. And sometimes that vibe works. Again, seeing a burned up Brad Dourif, menacing an old man in a wheelchair as smoke is like coming off of his body is really an incredible image. And then you combine it with all this superimposed, flame shit that looks really quite goofy. I think if the film had a better budget, I suppose, a bigger budget, I should say, I would have appreciated more, like, just the effects of people's faces melting or sizzling and burning, without the fake fire, I think may have actually served this movie, really well. Likely making it slightly more gruesome and perhaps making it an R rating, I guess. Maybe that's the problem with that, but.
Well, I don't think this ever even got a theatrical release.
I think this is straight to VHS, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think it was intended to be a theatrical release.
Ooh.
But what happened with Golan and Globus, and then it goes and gets shuttled off to somebody else who doesn't know what he's doing.
Yeah. Okay, well, it looks like it... Oh, that's funny. Well, it debuted at Cannes in May 1989 and had a VHS premiere in May 1990.
Gosh, to be in that movie theater in Cannes.
Wondering what the hell is going on.
What the heck? Yeah. Just looking around at everybody going, what the fuck? This guy did what? can we get... Can you put the massacre movie on for instead?
Yeah, no kidding, no kidding. There's a couple Tobe Hooper movies that I would rather watch than this one.
It was a blast to watch.
It really was. It was entertaining. Like we're talking shit about it, but it was still like entertaining. I wasn't looking at my phone, you know. I was looking at the screen, wondering what the fuck was going to happen next. And, yeah, occasionally interrupted by ads. It's free on Tubi, so you guys can, you know, make your own decisions about it. But, you know, in the canon of pyrokinesis films, spontaneous combustion most certainly is one of them.
I also love this poster, which features Brad Dourif with his head smoking.
Right, right, yeah. Again, great look. It's a great look.
But so even though it's badly made, I still want to give it a 3.
Yeah, no, it's in my head the whole time we're doing this. I'm like, this movie kind of sucks, but it's a 3 out of 5 because yep. I'm recommending it. Yep. 3 out of 5 is a bare recommendation for me. So yeah, that's what's happening. I mean, I'm glad we both agree on that, Tom.
Yeah.
Yeah. So here we go. We're going to play, you know, one of the most popular songs from one of my most favorite of bands. I'm going to play some Blue Oyster Cult, Burnin' for You.
I'm burning for you.
Home in the valley, home
Yes, we're back for another
Dread Media Top 5.
That's right, another Dread Media Top 5. This time, Top 5 Underrated Tobe Hooper Gems. Your mileage may vary on the usage of the word gem. Now, this one I actually had at number one because I think it's probably the best thing on this list. However, since it has been getting a lot of lip service from me quite recently, I decided to put it at number five to get it out of the way because it's likely to be the most obvious entry on that list. And I'm talking about his 1995 adaptation of a Stephen King short story called The Mangler. Yes, Tobe Hooper took a short story about a demonically possessed laundry folding machine and made a really fun, pretty wild horror movie with it. And man, I just love this movie. And I'm always happy to sing its praises. Here's the first entry for Robert Englund on this list. Of course, also Ted Levine is in this movie. The Mangler. Really fun. Number four, we're going ahead to that troubling year of horror in 2005. And we're taking a look at kind of a throwback straight-to-DVD release from Tobe Hooper. It's written by Jace Anderson and Adam Gearash. But really the only, for me, the only recognizable actor. Just taking a look here. Yeah, I don't really... Yeah. So basically just Denise Crosby, who was Tasha Yar in Star Trek The Next Generation. Anyway, it's sort of this throwback sort of haunted mortuary movie. Mortuary? Did I tell you the title already? Mortuary. You can watch this apparently on Prime and Plex as well. But a family moving into an abandoned funeral home, you know where this is going. Very sort of classic horror idea. I'm just realizing that number five should have been a tie between The Mangler and Eaten Alive. So let's just pretend it was. Anyway, The Mortuary is not going to change your life. It's probably a little meandering in the middle. But you might even still be able to find a really cheap DVD of it if you didn't want to go and watch it for free on Plex. So Mortuary, I think it's worth checking out. That was number four. Number three, we're going to go back a year to 2004. I actually grabbed this on DVD when I lived in Glasgow, Scotland. Another film written by Jace Anderson and Adam Gearash. I'm talking about the Toolbox Murders, which shares a title with a 1978 movie called The Toolbox Murders, but they are nothing like each other. This one stars just fresh post-May Angela Bettis. It's like an old Hollywood hotel, and I think it's like an apartment building now, right? But it's like an old hotel, and there's a supernatural murderer in it. And this one, you know, it's kind of dumb. It definitely feels much more like a 2004 film than Mortuary feels like a 2005 film, I'll tell you that much. And that's maybe not the best compliment, but The Toolbox Murders gets a pass for me because it pulls off an incredibly difficult to do but incredibly effective jump scare in the middle of the screen. And I'll say no more so as not to ruin it. The Toolbox Murders. And for our last two entries, we're jumping into the world of television. First, the world of network television, and it is the pilot episode and first aired episode of Freddy's Nightmares, the television show, the anthology horror television show, bounding off of the popularity of the film series. This was, what, 88? This came out in October of 88. And in particular, this there are some really great episodes. I don't really know them all by name. There's sort of this fantastic one where, you know, these kids are dying at school. And one of them is like, kid has cotton in his mouth and he's pulling it all out to the point where he chokes on it because he can't get it all out. Really just cool. Cool shit. Fun. But this one in particular, this pilot episode, is the origin of Freddy Krueger, like the trial of Freddy Krueger. And while it doesn't necessarily match the film so much, it is an interesting exercise to see a network television reimagining in some way of, or telling the origin of, a popular film character. So the episode is titled No More Mr. Nice Guy from Freddy's Nightmares. Now, this is not available to stream. I don't think it's ever had an official release, at least not past VHS. But this is something that I definitely bought a bootleg of because, you know, until they actually release it, you know, how else can you watch it? So there are bootlegs available. Definitely worth it. It's a fun little anthology series. So, and speaking of fun little anthology series, yes, I am a constant promoter of Masters of Horror. And while Toby Hooper had one of my least favorite episodes of season one, Dance of the Dead, I think it's nigh unwatchable. I think his effort that kicked off season two, The Damned Thing, is one of the best Masters of Horror episodes, period. Based on an Ambrose Bierce story written by Mick Garris and Richard Christian Matheson, of course directed by Toby Hooper. Sean Patrick Flannery stars in it. And it's sort of about this like malevolent force that's attacking a sheriff and his family in this... it's Texas. That's so funny because it was actually filmed in Cloverdale, which is about a 10-minute drive from where I grew up. Yeah, filming locations, 176th Street, British Columbia, Canada. And I lived, my address was 17322, so I was 3 blocks over from this. And several blocks south. I was on like 29th Avenue, and this was filmed round about, I don't know, like 40s? I can't really remember what Cloverdale was doing. But it's fun to see that. I mean, I think most of the Masters of Horror, I mean, not Takashi Miike, but most of the Masters of Horror things were filmed in and around Vancouver. But this one is the one that is absolutely the closest to home for me. And it's also a really fantastic, it's grim. It's grim, by the way. Really grim. Doesn't have the buoyant fun of a lot of the episodes of Masters of Horror. It's dark. Dark as hell. And I loved it. The Damned Thing from Masters of Horror Season 2. R.I.P. to the great Toby Hooper. We lost him 8 years ago, and truly he made a mark in horror cinema. And I feel like it's not brought up enough, but he's also a composer for several of his films. He did a lot of the music, at least for the first two Texas Chainsaw Massacre movies. And so I thought I would play a track from the score to the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And this is Jerry Finds Pam in the Freezer / Full Moon Saw Chase by Wayne Bell and Toby Hooper. And we'll come back and say goodbye. Thank you. And that is us, my friends. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode as much as I did putting it together for you. And if you did, you can let me know, dreadmediapodcast@gmail.com. Best way to reach me. Also, send your Q&A questions in, because right now I don't have a Q&A episode coming up. I don't have enough questions. So anything you want to ask me about, shoot. You can also send some questions to other platforms. I'm at dreadmedia on Twitter, Instagram, Blue Sky. There's a Dread Media Facebook group just called Dread Media. I'm on that. There's also a post in the Facebook group. Yeah, and then there's a Patreon. Patreon.com/DreadMedia. Support the show the best way I know how. And with that, I think that's it. No reason to hang around for no reason. All right, I'm going to kick out of here with some death metal. This has been a much more easier listening episode, so I'm going to change that for this last song. And it's the last song because these tend to be longer songs from these guys. This is from the brand new record by Malthusian. This, The Summoning Bell is the name of the album. This is the song, In Chaos, Exult. You guys take care of yourselves, take care of others, and we'll see you next week.